The Energy Matters to You podcast is a communication platform that features technologies and thought leaders working to advance energy efficiency. Energy Matters to You seeks to connect buyers with sellers so that practical, cost-effective energy efficiency and sustainable energy solutions continue to gain market traction. And now your hosts, Ron Galluli and Leo Ryan.
Hello and welcome to Energy Matters to You. Leo Ryan here along with my partner and collaborator, Ron Galluli. Ron, good to see you.
Good morning, Leo.
So I went to that BizNow gathering, these networking breakfasts, and the focus of the BizNow was town and gown, how the towns and the universities are dealing primarily with housing and expansion on the university campuses. And it was really interesting to see one thing that struck me is how much sustainability talk there was. I mean, every university is battling this with attracting students and faculty and being good corporate stewards. So everyone had this on their roadmap. And one of the things that the administrators from Tufts said was like, listen, sustainability is not separate from what we're doing for university operations. It's very much now it's integrated into all decisions about capital planning, new construction. I was really highlighted by that. Are you seeing a kind of similar message in the other folks you're talking to?
Well, sure. My oldest daughter, when she was at college, the college she went to was entering into a performance contract. And I believe the students had a committee that was involved in understanding about that contract and the sustainability benefits and the greenhouse gas reduction benefits associated with that contract. Now, we've been in the business a long time. I've never had college students talk about that 20, even 10 years ago. And here they are totally engaged in what the college is doing.
So we're really fortunate today. We have a really interesting guest that is exactly positioned at that spot where the marketplace needs this intelligence. We have Gabe Phillips with Catalyst Power with us. And Gabe, welcome to Energy Matters to you.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Good to be here.
So Gabe, I think this is a nice segue. I'm on at this marketplace. We got all these architects, engineers, we got facility managers, and they're trying to figure out what technology makes sense. And so, Gabe, why don't you just start us off with who Catalyst is and how you got here and what the offering is to the marketplace.
I'm going to double back to that, but from our perspective, the technology that makes sense the most is the one that saves customers the most money, because that's unfortunately the motivating factor, at least for our customer segment that we focus on at Catalyst. Well,
that's a wise motivator, and you can always sell on that spot there, right?
It's a lot more straightforward than trying to place value on the non-monetary benefits of reducing your carbon footprint. And that's true for most of the, at least for our focus, most business owners in America. So Catalyst Power is a decarbonization platform. You know, we focus all of our efforts on middle market, independently owned commercial and industrial end users. We focus geographically in the Northeast because here we've got the confluence of deregulation for retail, really high prices for electricity, and a very good political climate for incentives for distributed measures that are GHG reducing and carbon footprint reducing. And so the way we deliver on this decarbonization effort to our customers is by starting off as their retail supplier. That makes us relevant to them. That gives us insights about how they consume, what they consume, and what it costs them, so that we can make suggestions to them that will reduce their expense and decarbonize them at the same time. Those two things have to be together, otherwise our sales pitch falls flat. Our customers are not public companies. They don't have ESG goals. They're not getting pressure from investors. They are just independent business owners who need to get by. And their costs for energy are, they got about a fraction of their attention span that they can dedicate to that because they're in the middle of running their businesses. So
yeah,
we give them one place to look for their solutions with the most relevance and the most background information coming into those conversations, as compared to all the single solution providers that are out there.
So Gabe, when you call on these folks and you've got to get their attention, right? They're paying a monthly electric bill and it's not one of their biggest expenses in like labor costs and they got rent costs and things like that. So how savvy are these folks in terms of understanding what their options are? Do they even know in many cases if they have an option for selection of their energy spend?
The energy solutions marketplace has spent a lot of time educating residential consumers and a ton of time educating, you know, the world of public and, you know, public companies and universities and municipalities, right? It's everybody in between that has been completely left behind. At your home, if you're an independent manufacturer in upstate New York, you have more options for going solar, implementing energy efficiency, and doing all these other measures that reduce your carbon footprint economically than you do at your business. And that is crazy to us at Catalyst and totally perverse, but true. So the educational gap is significant in the corporate world that's independently owned. There's no one spending time on it. And so we have to have extremely simple solutions that lead first with economic value, both upfront and long-term, for our customers in order to get and keep their attention. With respect to decarbonization, which there's like baby steps that we take with our customers to get them there. I mean, first it's regular brown power retail supply. Now we know everything about how you consume and what you consume and what it costs. You're paying a bill that says Catalyst Power on it. You know who we are. We're not like some guy off the street that's knocking on your door to offer you a solution. Now, given that we have this insight and this relationship, can we suggest a community solar subscription to you? There's really no complication. There's nothing on your premises. There's no downside. There's no price commitment that you're making that could be wrong or could be out of the money in the future. It's purely just a guaranteed savings for the tenor that you stay with that asset.
Yeah.
And there's an increasing footprint of community solar markets out there that we participate in. But then those customers say to us, awesome, you saved me money that way. There's a solar component to it. What else could you do with us that would save us money that we don't have to lay out any cash for? And that's when we really get excited, because we know that we have that engagement. We're ready to teach them one more thing about what they could do without much effort or any CapEx to reduce their carbon footprint and save even more money, lock in their budgets for some proportion of their expense going forward, and make a dent in the visibility problem that they may have. One of our customers went that exact journey with us. They were from our first retail energy acquisition in upstate New York, farm, orchard, vineyard, you know, that sort of business. They, you know, a retail supply customer on a variable rate contract. We offered them something more complicated, a fixed rate contract, which they had never explored before. No one had bothered to walk them through the dynamics associated with that and the potential benefits of it. We got that done. And then we said, hey, what about this community solar subscription over here? Why don't we save you 10% on your total spend now with that? And they said, cool, what else can you do? Our customers are paying a premium for our products. And they believe they would like us to look, you know, like we were reducing our carbon footprint, but we don't have the cap to do it. We don't have the CapEx to do it. We don't have the capital. And so we said, great, we'll build a 200 kilowatt solar array and enter into a PPA with you. And that's in permitting and interconnection right now, for instance. And that's like our triple threat opportunity. It's like a perfect example of a customer that like didn't have any attention spent on how they spend in energy. We gave them a little bit of attention and they wanted some more. Now they learned something about solar and they said, what else can you do? And now they're hosting it. And they had like unusable real estate on their property. It made complete sense for them to leverage that land for something beneficial economically. And they also valued the non-monetary benefits of hosting a solar asset that they didn't pay for.
That's great.
That's like the perfect scenario.
That's a great story. Nice, nice segue through the whole thing. Okay, what I was thinking is that, so you engage with these folks, the orchard in this case, on their energy spend, right? So we go right in that, and then you created that fixed versus variable contracts, and you explain the difference to them. So I'm wondering, like, from Catalyst Power's perspective, are there things that you learn about a site's energy usage that start suggesting to you where you might go with technologies or options? What's coming off the meter that's interesting to you that prompts you to make a suggestion to your clients?
Okay, so there's a complication associated with that question that I just want to address at the outset. You said what's coming off the meter. The problem for us frequently is that meter data is not hourly, and it's not in its profile. And even for like relatively large consumers, access to hourly data for a retail supplier is difficult to get your hands on or expensive or cumbersome. We have better access to it than anyone else could because we're a licensed supplier in these markets. And that's one of our competitive advantages for sure. But it is not a problem that the utility world, no offense, Ron, has solved yet. And I want them to. It would better inform customers about the true cost of how they consume, when they consume, because power is priced hourly and instantaneous demand is priced, you know, via markets, capacity markets, in, you know, specific, and then demand charges. And those are real costs that are not being measured as accurately for wholesale settlements as they could be. And a lot of utilities have deployed interval metering, but they use it to manage their system and their reliability, not for wholesale settlements for the retail supply world. And so the price signals aren't getting to customers. But where we do have that data, We get interval data. We see what they consume when they consume. And their capacity tags are something that we incur the cost of. And so changing their load factor, the relationship between their peak demand and their average demand, has a benefit to us as the retail supplier, which we share with our customer. Sorry, Ryan, you look like you wanted to.
Yeah, no, you touched on the
utilities.
Point.
I'm sorry. I was
beating up. I don't work for the utility any longer. So I'm an advocate for utility data and the transparency of that data. But you did focus on teaching. And what I've found recently, especially in a few medium-sized customer visits, they're not aware of how they're billed through the utility. They don't understand their demand charge. They have no idea when you say capacity charges what that is. So you bring that education component that's missing in that medium-sized customer base. I know some utilities are better about having that data available than others, but that's the first thing I do is take that data, plot it out, review that data with the customer, because it can tell you so much about how that facility is operating. And as you mentioned, it's that education process. This is what you're doing. This is what we can do for you based on the parameters of what the utility is billing you at and what the monetary options and incentives out there are available to help with those situations.
I've always viewed my job both here at Catalyst and before partially as demystifying what's happening in the way that we like consume and pay for energy in America. I mean, it's to my friends, to my family, to my customers, to my clients in my old business. I had an outsourced energy management business before this. And before that, I was a trader. And so I had to demystify the markets for myself to make money. I felt that the opacity associated with our energy economy is really problematic. We don't empower people with information that they could use to change their behavior. And so like electricity is funny. Like, you know, as a retail supplier, I pay for 30 different things to deliver a kilowatt hour to a customer. Like 30 different charges I have to incur between renewable energy credit, you know, costs that are 4 to 7 different types of RECs I got to buy. There's reliability-based charges for reserves, spinning reserves, operating reserves, non-spinning reserves. Then I have capacity charges that are like, you know, really the most direct way that the grid maintains reliability that nobody understands thoroughly except for like very, very large and sophisticated end users, and only really with the help of like consultants and third parties who walk them through that, right? Who just demystify that one small component for them. And then on top of that, I got the whole like futures market of electricity to contend with, you know, for like the other half of the cost associated with serving someone's load. And the customer, all they see on their bill is one line item, Catalyst, 8 cents a kilowatt hour or something like that. And that's it.
Yeah. It's funny. As you go through that, I'm just envisioning all the conversations I've had with folks with capacity charge and peak demand, things like that. And you see the ice cream headache coming on and the eyes glaze over. Interest in going down this pathway.
So we try to just really simplify everything for our customer. And you can't do that if you're not also the retail supplier of record, right? Like I incur capacity charges. I incur costs that are different based upon when my customer consumes what they consume, because prices are hourly in the power markets. And so because of that, I can say to the customer, let me develop something at your premises that changes how you consume that will not alter your operations at all. We'll integrate in phase with the grid. We call it our connected microgrid product because it's connected to the grid. It's a microgrid. It's on site. There's load and balancing happening, but we're not like islanding them from the utility. And that's really key. We call it a connected microgrid. You are connected to the grid still. So there's literally no operational change that you'll ever experience.
Yeah.
You don't have to like drop a third shift to save money. You don't have to cut any equipment or change your HVAC settings. You just keep doing what you're doing. And we got the rest. And you will now see a decrease in your costs due to what we produce on site. And the rest of what we supply you for will also reduce that price because we're experiencing a benefit from all those other dynamics I just walked you through.
Yeah.
We got a video coming out actually pretty soon that'll walk everybody through how prices are formed in the wholesale markets and like what a gen stack is and why putting free power on the grid reduces the cost for everybody involved because we push down the generation stack, right, that we have to reach into when we set prices, the ISO level. And I feel like that may be like more complex than people want, but everyone needs to understand how prices are formed. Yeah. And how their behavior impacts those wholesale prices.
So, Gabe, we're spending a lot of time here in this in the whole the retail supply aspect of the Catalyst Power offering. But then you teased us a little bit with your story about the orchard where you had this this community solar PPA, and there's actually a physical deployment on the site. And I'm curious, like, you know, Catalyst Power is not a huge company to have all of these little segments in it. Can you tell us about the partnerships, or, you know, where does Catalyst Power actually bring the technology to market, and when are you relying on the marketplace that has kind of established offerings where you become the educator and integrator of those different offerings?
That word you just used is precisely how we view ourselves. We're the integrator and really a sales organization. I mean, to change a customer's behavior or to adopt something they don't really feel like figuring out is a complicated thing. You're getting people to do stuff they don't particularly feel like doing. There's benefit to it, but, you know, it requires them to like lift a finger and think a little bit. And that's a sales activity. And to bring other people's technology to bear to provide these solutions to our customers in a simple way is our main goal at Catalyst. We have lots of partnerships because there's other, we believe in the division of labor. And so we outsource our engineering, procurement, and construction for our solar projects. We have invested in a community solar and utility scale developer that we partner with for all the other development activity all along the journey of getting a project from conception and signature to actually built. There's a lot of steps in there, permitting, interconnect, you know, environmental studies, you name it. There's a lot of things to quarterback, and we didn't put together the expertise for that at Catalyst. We have partnerships that help us with that. Now, they happen to be extremely integrated in our operation to the point where we own part of the business. And, you know, and that's key, that we're all swimming in the same direction. We're all rowing the boat in the same direction. So we have that shared destiny as a combination of companies. And we may continue to do that with other solutions providers out there that have a shared goal with us. And I think that that's like a wise way to create an ecosystem and a wise way to like more seamlessly deliver these opportunities for customers to say yes and to save money and to decrease their carbon footprint. We're trying to make this as frictionless as possible because it's already really hard.
Gabe, I was reading an article on Canary Media about how utilities are being caught flat-footed by the projected load growth associated with electrification. So I don't know if customers are talking about that, you know, being able to address their own load needs and not necessarily waiting for the utility to be able to provide them service, and the incentives that are associated with some of those upgrades, whether it's new heat pumps. There's a lot happening in that marketplace to address hot water needs and even steam needs through the heat pump technology.
So those incentives are a patchwork, right? As you are, I'm sure, aware, right? Not even just at a state level, but even down at the municipality level, the incentives to electrify are different. New York City, we have a pretty good footprint in here at Catalyst, and a lot of our customers have potential exposure to Local Law 97. How they address that is like one topic of conversation that we can assist with, but heat pumps are a huge challenge for them. They take up way more space than, you know, their traditional HVAC solutions. And so cogeneration is one solution that we've actually started to invest in. We acquired a majority stake in our first operating cogen plant at the end of last year. It happens to be in New Jersey, but our next string are likely to be in New York City with customers who are exposed to Local Law 97 and need to reduce their carbon footprint somehow. Other ways that we're helping with Local Law 97 are not necessarily through electrification of their other mechanicals, but, you know, we're going to subscribe them to community solar assets that we develop elsewhere in Con Ed's footprint, because that will also contribute to reducing their exposure to Local Law 97. But that's just like one example of it. I have another customer in Buffalo that's they make asphalt and they have giant trucks and they can't electrify their fleet at all, but they do have big power needs for some of their equipment on site. And so they got out ahead of this years ago, and they basically took over their own facilities from in this case, National Grid, and they own the service from the street on into their property. And they maintain their own transformers. And so we're talking to them about storage, because that is like a great solution for them when street power, as they call it, is unavailable. You know, when it happens, you know, one of their pieces of equipment, you know, the asphalt cools and it takes them 2 days to chip it out. And it's like a huge economic downside associated with it. So the second New York finally gets out of their own way and announces their storage incentives, that'll be my first call is to that customer, for instance. I mean, our customers are not thinking about electrification the way that the environmental community is thinking about it. It's all, again, our customers being independent businesses are like, where's the economic value for me here? am I avoiding a stick or is there a carrot?
Yeah,
otherwise, if it's like neutral or environmental based, or you know, the other decision making tools that we might want them to bring to bear, it's just not a, they're not able to prioritize it. They got to make payroll next month, right? They got to leave a valuable business to their children. Like, how are they going to do that?
Those are the priorities.
Yeah,
this is great. I wanted to go right into this spot, and you let us right in there. You started early on talking about a big part of the market just aren't served from an education standpoint. They're busy running the business, and they don't have time to dive in deep on this energy. So Catalyst Power, Gabe Phillips, becomes an expert in this area. And then you hit on really nice languaging. This patchwork of incentives that historically drives these boom or bust kind of segments of the marketplace. We've seen that. Ron and I have seen that for 40 years almost. So when Gabe Phillips and Catalyst Power are like looking at the marketplace and saying, where do we go next? Do we focus on orchards or asphalt planning, or do we focus on local laws that dictate that? What's the strategy? How do you get to the marketplace with your offering so that, you know, you're using your time effectively and you're delivering the most value to the marketplace and driving the most growth for Catalyst Power?
Customer first. That's it. The relationship with our customer is where we have to start. The second that you're a trusted resource to the customer, then whatever materializes that we can get our heads wrapped around, that's relatively simple from an engineering perspective, because our projects tend to be on the smaller side. And because of that, they need to be simplistic from an engineering perspective and easy to underwrite. It's already hard to underwrite CNI projects, right? So, but keeping things simple from an engineering perspective allows us to, you know, to stamp out projects of whatever the incentives are at that time. And what's key to our business model is geographic diversification. Like, I have customers right now in Pennsylvania. There's not a community solar market yet. House bill, you know, just got out of committee, and let's see if they pass it. But I've already got customers there when they do. And that's key, is starting with the customer relationship, be their trusted resource. And then when the opportunity presents itself, as long as it fits within the mandate that I described, like we can easily get our heads wrapped around it, engineer it, and then fund it, because that's another part of Catalyst's, important part of Catalyst's business, is that we fund the projects for our customers and we own and operate them. So we have a combination of short-term retail contracts and really long-lived assets that are contracted with customers and outside their fence. And so that combination of simple tools and, you know, the whack-a-mole of incentives are, you know, what's key for our geographic diversification and our starting first with the customer.
So on that customer, so thinking about those specific customers, it's like, is there a person in the organization or is there a maturity level in the customer that makes them a good client? I mean, some folks are just too small. It's just there's not much of an opportunity. Some are too big. They've got their different kind of leadership, or they're foreign owned or something like that. So Gabe, if there's a tell us about the right contact, the right maturity level of the organization where Catalyst can make a difference.
I mean, you just mentioned like five different variables, right? So like, you know, if three of those were aligned in the right direction, then they're better than somebody who's only got two of them aligned in the right direction, right? I mean, if there is an easy incentive structure that a simple product can be offered that has deep economic value, that's like one box that's checked. They also happen to have an environmental goal that they make public statements about on their website, which we comb before we speak to people, then, you know, that ups their score in our prioritization on who we're going to spend time with as a customer. If they're foreign owned and they've made commitments publicly, like, or in some way in that regard, then like, that's another like alignment. If the kids are taken over from the parents and they've got a different view on how they want the business's carbon footprint to look, that's like another area of alignment. So we have, at best, you know, three out of five, I guess, you know, in any instance. But what we have found so far in our couple of years of activity is that fortunately or unfortunately, you know, it's a simple answer, that the most money that you can save somebody is going to get the most attention from our customer segment. So we really prioritize opportunities that are in special regions with additional ITC value, like, you know, energy communities, first and foremost, distressed municipalities in Connecticut for their program, and you know, Eversource East for the storage, you know, opportunity in New England, in Massachusetts. And, you know, we have to be a little bit more strategic in that regard on how we focus our efforts with our customers, you know, at first. But we almost have something that everybody could leverage here for decarbonization and saving money. I mean, pizzerias and laundromats are our customers, and they sign up for community solar subscriptions. extremely large industrial consumers are our customers. And, you know, we do more sophisticated, you know, hosted solutions, and we build a megawatt of solar on their roof, and we'll put a, you know, a battery in the back. And it just, it all depends on the scenario, but we have to lead with economic value first.
Yeah, love it. Understood. So we're coming up to our 20-minute target here. Ron, anything that we've missed? Has been a really entertaining conversation, but any spot you want to dig in on?
Well, Gabe, like I tell my team, you're making customers' life easier and you're saving them money. I think that's the big takeaway, because navigating the array of incentives and opportunities out there is not easy. And especially in that medium-sized customer base, they need an ally to help them do that. So I think the future is bright for Catalyst Power.
We've run into like one funny objection that's come up a little more frequently than I expected, that I think you guys will actually have an interesting perspective on, but with your focus on technology and how things change. I've had customers say, you know, we don't want to make a 20-year commitment for solar, because what if like in 5 years, solar technology is better and it's cheaper? I thought that was a do nothing answer is their conclusion. So we purposely scale down the size of our projects so that we're only producing about 20 to 50% of a customer's needs at most, typically. That's got other benefits to us, because there's still load for us to serve as a retail supplier that we can, you know, benefit from the drop in cost around and share it with the customer on. But that also leaves optionality for them and for us, that whatever the world dreams up in the future, a fusion generator, you know, that we can deploy safely on site, that we can fund, own, and operate and easily engineer, like, we got lots of load left to be able to serve that with. And like, so I think that from a engineering perspective and a technology perspective, the fact that things are changing and they will continue to change forever is not a good reason to halt and do nothing. But it is a good reason to try to scale down what you're pitching. And a lot of these single solution providers out there that don't have this field vision, I find, pitch solutions first that like take up all the customer's consumption with whatever they're going to produce. And I think that oversizing assets is a problem in our sector, and people need to like realize that customers need optionality in addition to that.
That is a great point. That's a great point. And we talked earlier on about you know, this sales function of changing behavior. They've got a practice that's been serving them for, pick a number, 20, 30, 50, 100 years, and they're reticent to make that change. And then by introducing, you're paying a retail energy bill, let's start there. And then you build that relationship, trusted advisor, and you can help them filter through the options that are out there. And then maintaining that flexibility is critical. You know, there's regional needs that are different. So great.
And there's changing technologies that you guys probably hear a lot about on your podcast.
Exactly.
And,
on a daily basis. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is what we do is so exciting.
Love it. Love it. Well, listen, Gabe, we could talk all day on this, but we promise our listeners like a 20-minute function here. Catalyst Power, Gabe Phillips. They can find you on the internet. Any other spots you want to point out where they can find you? You have that video coming out, so we can look for that.
Keep a lookout on our LinkedIn page, on our website, our blog. We try to, you know, put a lot of information out for people to demystify these markets.
Outstanding. Outstanding. All right, Ron, any last words?
No, that was a great, great show, Gabe. Glad to have you on the podcast.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Outstanding. So on behalf of Leo Ryan, Ron Galluli, this has been Energy Matters to You. There's work to be done. Go make a difference.
Support for Energy Matters to You comes from National Grid, Raytheon, Siemens, Keurig Dr. Pepper, Eversource, Mitsubishi Electric Train HVAC US, Honeywell, Skillings & Sons LLC, AHA Consulting Engineers, GDS Associates, QGM Consulting, Acela Energy Group, B2Q Associates, Leidos, Conservation Solutions Corporation, Energy Management Associates Incorporated, and FMC Technologies. Do you or someone you know want to be featured on Energy Matters to You? We're seeking professionals in the energy industry to offer insight, strategy, and solutions. For more information, visit aeenewengland.org/podcasts. For more information on the Association of Energy Engineers New England chapter, visit aeenewengland.org.